down.
How about this, Cowboys?
Yeah! Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to week four of your fantasy football season. And we have your fantasy football forecast from the tower. I am your host, Travis Yates.
I am also your host, Lydia Cruz. Co-host,
Glad we're in agreement this week. Lydia, you are a bit of a soothsayer, I would say. After last week, starting with Thursday night, we recorded Thursday before the game. And I'm watching the game, Patriots and Texans, and I was impressed at how spot on you were of how that game would unfold.
Thank you. Bill Belichick is just an easy person to bet on, though. So it doesn't even really feel that fair. He could literally put a block of cheese in at quarterback and win a game.
And we're getting close to that.
Yeah. I mean, Tim Tebow was there, so I guess. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry, Tim Tebow fan.
You also said that you'd like to see just how many quarterbacks they could go through and he could keep winning with. And, of course, who's on the injury report now? Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah.
So are we going to see Edelman? We're just jumping right into the breaking news here. Are we going to see Edelman under center this weekend?
Oh, don't you wish we would? It's exactly like you said last week. You never want to wish harm on another human being. And sometimes fantasy football tests my limits of ethical, because I'm like, oh, can't a player just get injured already? And then I'm like, that's a terrible thing to think. But if Prescott could be, or if Jacoby Brissett could be out for just this minor thing, who wouldn't want to see Edelman in there?
Ugh. And you very well may, because I do think he's going to play. I think that he's feeling up to it. But if you can't throw the ball, how effective can you be back there? So if he re-aggravates that hand injury,
yeah,
we're one sack away from your wish of Julian Edelman behind center. Let's talk about some other breaking news here as we're moving forward into week four. I've got some interesting, the impact here is on team defenses, which depending on how your league scores may or may not be of importance to you. But, you know, the big news out of Houston this week, J.J. Watt, possibly done for the season on IR, is gone for now at least 8 weeks, cannot return until 8 weeks.
Ouch.
Houston is quickly crumbling on both sides of the ball.
Yeah. If you're a Houston fan, this has got to hit you hard, because more than anything else, he's a team leader. And when you've got a young quarterback, and I mean, granted, you've got a great receiver, but still, that's just got to be for your morale. That's a huge hit.
I was so impressed when the Texans were on Hard Knocks. I fell in love with J.J. Watt.
Me too, right? He's out there practicing at later than everyone, before everyone. Even if that was just a little Hollywood trick, but
it might have been a little bit. But you could tell that he just loves being a football player. Mm-hmm. He knows his role as a role model, and he likes, embraces being the team leader, especially when it was juxtaposed with Brian Cushing, who was really bullying some of the other younger players, and you were getting the opposite effect from there. So it made J.J. Watt's approach to the game stand out even further.
And he still got one of the greatest quotes in my mind, which was, I remember when he signed his big contract and they asked him, hey, what's the first thing you buy? Because that's a cliche question at this point. And he said, well, you know, I Googled, what do rich people buy? I searched through all of the things, didn't really like any of them. So just, I'm going to keep playing football. That's not like verbatim, but that is the summarization of his quote.
A man of the people right there. I had to Google what do rich people buy.
Right?
That's awesome. Love it. Bad news for the Texans defense. Good news for Cincinnati's defense. Another highly drafted defense, if you have highly drafted defenses, in their leader on the field, off the field, Vontaze Burfict is back from suspension. And so I would expect to see some improvement immediately in that Cincinnati defense.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And it couldn't come at a better time for Cincy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We've got some injury news out of New York with wide receiver Eric Decker. He has re-aggravated a shoulder injury, and he's likely going to have an MRI. So you couple this with Brandon Marshall, and last week we talked about both his age and his injury history, and I think that the Quincy Enunwa waiver wire suggestion is looking even better now.
Yeah.
He's becoming quickly the number one receiver just by attrition.
Yeah. And, I mean, you hope that Fitzpatrick will kind of rebound. He's thrown one too many interceptions already this year, but without those receivers, that's troubling.
Decker off to a slow start this season, only 9 receptions, 494 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So, yeah, the Jets have problems all over the place.
Yeah.
Any news out of the NFC?
Out of the NFC, one of the biggest headlines, bad news Cowboys fans, Dez Bryant. I could just end that sentence there because...
Is that his new nickname? Bad news.
Bad news Bryant. I like it. So we probably are pretty used to the Pro Bowler's antics by now, but he still surprises me sometimes. So Sunday Night Football, he sustained a slight hairline fracture to his right knee. Now, he didn't leave the game early. He stayed in. They won versus the Bears, of course. Bryant underwent an MRI Wednesday. That's when they officially diagnosed the fracture, but it was only after he missed an MRI appointment and a team meeting earlier in the week, Monday and Tuesday, which he's now being fined for. So head coach Jason Garrett was addressing Bryant's behavior this week, and he said, quote, right after the game on Sunday night, he got some information about his knee, and he suspected it was a serious injury. He's a very passionate guy, like we've talked about, and he really thought he was going to get some bad news when he got the MRI on Monday. Like some of us do in life, at times he avoided it and didn't come in to take care of his business on Monday or Tuesday. Then he came on Wednesday and took care of that part of it. We got the information he suspected. It was worse than the information he got.
So no news is better than bad news for Dez, I suppose.
And I just don't know how to feel about that quote. That's a huge, a long justification for just saying you didn't do your job. You didn't. I understand. Yes, it's tough to hear that news, but that's what being an adult is.
And that's classic Cowboys trying to make excuses, make up for... Yeah. One of their star players' antics off the field. It's the new Cowboy way.
It is. It's kind of become the Jerry Jones way, I'd
Absolutely.
Say.
Absolutely.
And so I guess Dez is hopeful that he'll play this week, but Garrett described him as day-to-day, week-by-week. So.
And I'm particularly interested in his health with matchup versus the Bengals coming up in 10 days with a week 5 matchup. So, again, not wishing harm, but it would be nice... For a somewhat banged up Bengals secondary right now to have Dez out of there as well. So we'll keep a close eye on that on the fantasy forecast from the tower here. Any other breaking news out of the NFC?
Other NFC news, probably the other big headline for me. I know I'm the Seahawks fan here, but they signed veteran running back C.J. Spiller this week with Thomas Rawls banged up and rookie running back C.J. Procise battling through. He's had a series of injuries. I mean, he was out of training camp for a long time. Now he's sidelined again. So the Hawks turned to Spiller to add some depth there in the backfield. He's the another ex-Buffalo Bill to come to Seattle after Marshawn Lynch and Fred Jackson before him. So I think he'll be right at home at Safeco. He's already got other – he's going to share snaps with veteran back Kristen Michael. And then they also have Alex Collins, rookie running back, in there too.
And I do believe Michael was one of your suggested pickups last week, perhaps.
I think so. Mm-hmm.
And so another soothsayer moment for you. Thomas Rawls going on the shelf for longer than what perhaps we first expected. Do you have your C.J. Spiller jersey yet, I must ask?
No. I mean, more props to him. Seattle has always operated, I think, under that veteran running back, rookie running back committee. They're interested in developing the future of the backfield. You know, they don't want to rely on one person. We had Spencer Ware there for a while, he won a Super Bowl with us, which I forget about because he's now gone on to be very dominant in a committee with, you know, Charkhandrick West and Jamaal Charles. But I think, like, I wouldn't bet on CJ Spiller. I wouldn't pick him up by any means, but it's always an option if you've got if you're really scrapped for something in 14 team league, maybe.
You just keep waiting for him to become the player that we expected him to be coming out of school. And yeah, I don't think it's ever going to happen, but you know, stranger things have happened in the NFL. Yeah. So, you know, he may be a Priest Holmes type player that comes on really late in his career. Fantasy darling for several years ago, but all right, so let's talk about you. So no suggestion to pick up CJ Spiller, but who are the suggested pickups if you're looking for QB help, or maybe if you just historically draft quarterbacks poorly, then I think I have the answer to your problem. Carson Wentz.
All right, yeah.
Is a rookie, of course, playing like a 10-year vet. He's available in nearly 70% of ESPN leagues. I mean, 769 yards, 5 touchdowns through 3 games. Most importantly, no interceptions through 3 games. And that's what rookie quarterbacks are known to do, is throw interceptions. So this projects, if he stays on this pace, and he's not lighting the world on fire as far as a quarterback play, but as a rookie quarterback, he's playing outstanding. And his stats project to 4,100 yards and 27 touchdowns on the season.
I mean, how can you argue with that? Plus, I mean, he's got weapons there, and those aren't, you know, they're 3-0. It's not, they're on a bye this week, but all those wins weren't against easy teams, you know? I think he's very impressive, and if you can stand to have that little bit of, I mean, he won't be playing for you this week, obviously, so if you've got the extra spot on your bench, I'd pick him up.
Yeah, definitely playing the long game in a keeper league if he's available. That might be a nice grab for you. And Philly's defense is improved this year, so, you know, he's not under the gun to put up a ton of points that some other rookie quarterbacks often find themselves doing.
Everything is just better when Chip Kelly's not around, isn't it? No, I'm sorry. That's mean. Sorry. Sorry, Oregon fans. Speaking of rookies, I have another QB suggestion, and that would be Trevor Siemian. Yes, he's a rookie. He put up great numbers last week. Chasing last week's point totals is usually just a bad strategy in general. But, I mean, if you look at him, he just looks like he's turned a corner, turned a page in his NFL development. And he looks confident out there. He's developing really good chemistry with Sanders and Thomas. And this is a good offense that is moving into an easier part of its schedule. They get, what is it, Tampa Bay this week. They gave up 37 points to the LA Rams, you guys. So he's owned in 24% of Yahoo League, excuse me. So still very possible out there.
I had the displeasure of watching Trevor Siemian live this weekend, weekend in Cincinnati. And I watched our defense roll the dice and lose against him. He made some very veteran-like plays, taking advantage of some injuries that we had, read the blitz, picked up on it easily and handily, 4 touchdowns. And a good week for Siemian. And I agree with you that they're through a very tough part of their schedule. Mm-hmm. And I think as a whole, that offense, the arrow is pointing up. Yeah. So that's a nice. Well, I gave you some tight end suggestions last week, and I will continue with that trend. Jay Cutler's injury is the benefit of tight end Zach Miller. He had 8 receptions last week, 2 of which were touchdowns with Brian Hoyer in there. So Hoyer favoring his tight end a little more than Cutler has so far this season. Also in San Diego, Hunter Henry had 5 receptions for 72 yards. And the big news out of Tampa Bay this week was, of course, Austin Seferian Jenkins, the starting tight end with a DUI, kicked off the team. Cameron Brate, 5 receptions, 46 yards, and 2 touchdowns now, the official starting tight end for a pass-happy Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, he's on my list as well. He was battling Austin Seferian Jenkins there for a while, but now he is going to be one of the top targets. Vincent Jackson is looking like a shell of his former self so far this year. And so he's really only competing with Mike Evans there. He's only owned in 9% of Yahoo League, so definitely worth a look if you're in need in the tight end position.
Anybody else for us?
Yeah, I've got a few wide receiver suggestions this week. Terrell Pryor. Let's talk about Pryor. What an interesting pickup. He's now owned in 71% of Yahoo leagues, which is a 49% increase from last week, which should not shock anybody because he was the utility player last week.
The only thing that shocked me was his play.
Yeah, right? I mean, okay, so he made Cleveland's offense worth watching, which it was such a question mark in week three, what was going to happen. And he's out there playing QB and wide receiver stats. So in some ways, he's looking to take more snaps at QB this week. It's a definite possibility. And in that, and I mean, it's a bit of a gamble, but imagine the ceiling there. If you're getting QB numbers as a wide receiver, I will definitely be playing him this week.
So a few things to consider here. One is, does your league allow for quarterback scoring if you have a wide receiver?
Yeah.
And so if so, then he certainly becomes even more valuable mm-hmm. to you. And I think this is truly a case of, it's interesting how every now and again you will see a player and a coach almost for their entire careers tied together. And right now this is Hugh Jackson, yeah. who's really a mad scientist as an offensive coach, and you see it coming to fruition here. This, he drafted Terrell Pryor in Oakland. He brought Pryor along to when he was offensive coordinator in Cincinnati. It didn't work out, but they tried some mm-hmm. packages there with him. And then now in Cleveland, through a credit to Pryor's hard work and dedication mm-hmm. to doing whatever's asked of him, and then Hugh Jackson seeing the long game with him and knowing that I will eventually get the best out of this guy. Kudos to both player and coach.
And you said, I mean, they are trying some kind of mad scientist-y kind of Moneyball-ish things over there this year. But for a coach to be that invested in a player that he would, you know, pick him up or want him involved in, you know, three different teams that you're at, I think is a good sign for his development and what he sees, the potential he sees in him. So that's a definite possibility this week. Also, if you're in need at the wide receiver position, Jamison Crowder could be a good pickup. He's owned in only 42% of Yahoo leagues. So that's a good plan. Running back, Jordan Howard or Dwayne Washington were my two picks this week. Howard saw an expanded role with the Bears in week three, their loss to Dallas, but with running back Jeremy Langford injured out 4 to 6 weeks, he could really be the beneficiary of that. He's got the talent mixed with the opportunity now. I think that he could put up some staggering numbers here in the coming weeks.
And Langford hasn't looked all that impressive early on.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah. The job may be Howard's
yeah.
to get a firm grasp on moving forward.
You could argue that he is the most hands-down talented running back there in that backfield, and he also has receiving skills, which makes him – and it's kind of rare now for a running back to be able to play through all three downs, and he can do that. He's
Absolutely.
Got a skill set.
So we love to offer advice, and we love it even more when it pays off for you. So hopefully you listened last week when I told you to buy low on Allen Robinson because he followed up with 7 receptions and 2 touchdowns versus Baltimore. So we're back with some more buy low, sell high candidates this week. And so my first buy low candidate for you this week is Washington tight end Jordan Reed. He's not having a terrible season, but he has no tight end or no touchdowns yet. He's got declining stats each week. He had 7 receptions in week 1, 5 in week 2, 4 in week 3. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was off in the hot, like the second highest rated tight end at the beginning of the season heading into the drafts after Gronk. And he's not putting up the numbers. He might be there for you to buy low.
Okay. I like it. My candidate this week was Odell Beckham Jr., the man who threw the most epic hissy fit this weekend, attempted to fight the kicker's practice net, I think, and it fought back. I would say this is the time if you need a quality receiver to make an offer for him, because it's probably the lowest you're going to get. He has yet to score a touchdown, I believe, in the first 3 weeks of play. He's, you know, if you could find someone who's frustrated with his play and probably get a good deal for him off or maybe a similar type of receiver and get a bonus out of it somewhere. This is probably the most reasonable I think you'd ever be able to get him. So if you need that, I'd go for it now.
And I actually have Beckham on my team. And so I'm seeing that and I'm sensing the frustration because I've expected a lot more. And I'm breaking down why that's happening. And I think it's more the emergence of the rookie on the opposite side of the field and Sterling Shepard, who I loved coming out of school last year. And then it is his own play, although you did see a little bit of the immaturity coming through, as you said, with the fight with the.
Yeah, I think, and I mean, you've got Victor Cruz looking, you know, coming off a 2-year stint, looking better than he ever has. And they have always been a pass heavy offense. But if you've got more weapons, that's just, it's going to be spread around more.
And there are injury problems at running back. So yeah. I expect pass heavy to continue.
Yeah,
so
Rashad Jennings, yes.
We should probably see more of all of the Giants receivers moving forward. So that's a good candidate. I have another receiver for you for a buy low, Green Bay wide receiver Randall Cobb.
Yeah.
You know, the entire Green Bay offense just looks a little off this week. Even with the 4 touchdowns last week from Rodgers, still only put up 213 yards, which was the season high for him, which is so rare. So Cobb, 12 receptions on the season, 132 yards and no touchdowns. And much like Reed, stats are declining each week. And when you see that trend, for me anyway, that's the time to pounce on an owner who's
frustrated.
Yeah. And that's when you get that. We're going to see the yardage come for that passing offense in Green Bay. It's just a matter of, you know, Jordy Nelson was gone last year, so it's getting him back into the offense and Rodgers getting comfortable with everyone's role again. And by midseason, I think that Cobb will be back on track, as will all the Green Bay offensive players.
I've got a candidate for sell high, and I'm going to actually go with two different New England Patriots. I'm going to go with Tom Brady at this point and Rob Gronkowski. Tom Brady, because he'll be back in week 5. And if you have a halfway decent backup quarterback and you're in need of some other pieces, I think this is the time when you can sell Brady and get some decent return on it. Obviously, he's an incredible quarterback, and if you want that consistency in that in your position, that's great. But you can pick up a decent, like we were talking about beforehand, you can pick up a Derek Carr or a Blake Bortles who's been struggling so far this year and still put up considerable numbers. There's also a lot of rookies to consider that we've talked about, you know, Dak Prescott, there's Trevor Siemian, Carson Wentz, that could do good things for you. And if you are hurting, as most of us are, for running backs or wide receivers with all of the IR injuries, that would be a good time to sell. Now, Gronkowski, similar kind of situation. He's still dealing with rehabbing back his hamstring injury. I know he really wants to get out there, but the reality is, what is he going to see this season? He saw 14 snaps on his return on Sunday and kind of just looked like a really toned down, tame version of Rob Gronkowski. The league is moving, as we know, is moving towards more of a passing league, but the gap between the scoring of the number 6 tight end, number 12 tight end is rapidly closing, and same with the number 1 tight end and the number 6 tight end. So you're really not seeing that much difference from an elite, from a Greg Olsen, Rob Gronkowski, than you will from a number 6. And if you can, I would say this is the time to sell high and get one of those pieces that you need in exchange.
It does seem to be a down year for tight ends.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob Tammy is a few receptions off the lead of receiving tight ends, and it's Jacob Tammy. So that shows you that, you know, it is a down league. And I think that it's a reflection of defenses playing more nickel, more dime, planning for just the passing game in general, with it being more of a passing league. And so those tight ends that traditionally could work the seam, your Jordan Reeds that are, you know, more athletic than your traditional blocking tight ends, they are being countered now with defenses that are ready for those types of offenses. And so, yeah, I thought about adding Gronk to my sell high as well. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't have a reception yet this season.
No.
And for a player of that caliber, and what are you going to get moving forward? The inevitable injuries when he he hasn't even been on the field yet and he's hurt. So when he does get out there, when's the next injury coming down the pike? So I agree with that one. I've got a high-profile running back on my sell high list, Devontae Freeman for the Falcons. So obviously he had a monster game last week. So if you've been waiting for it, you got it. 207 yards from scrimmage. But it was versus the Saints.
Yeah.
Okay. So
if you don't put up those numbers against the Saints.
Exactly. It was against the Saints, and the Falcons are committed to a timeshare with Tevin Coleman. So moving forward, you're not going to see that type of yardage. And no rushing touchdowns this season, only one receiving touchdown so far. I think that his stock is probably the highest it will be the whole season, or at least until they play the Saints again. And so if you can find somebody that has, you know, you talked about the injury bug that has just decimated so many teams and the running back position as a whole, now would be the time to sell Freeman high to somebody who is desperate for a running back that they think they're getting last year's Devontae Freeman maybe, and they're going to get this year's instead.
I totally agree with that. I actually had both Devonta and Tevin on my squad last year and dealt with them going through injuries at different times. And they're both extremely talented. I can see why, you know, Dan Quinn is committed to having a committee there. And there's always the possibility, as we've seen, that a running back can go down and get injured lickety-split. So if you can sell him high off of this great game performance, I say go for it.
All right, we're moving on to our pick'em leagues. And you know, teams are starting to come together and give us a picture of exactly who they are. And so the pick'ems, as you think, might get easier. You also have some pretty good matchups. So unless you're playing, let's say, Cleveland, it's not automatic that you know what you're getting into. So I'll give you my first game for the AFC. I've got, following your advice here, I've got New England over Buffalo. The game is in New England. Even with a block of cheese at quarterback, I would take New England at this point. They're 4.5-point favorites, and with the game in New England, I think Belichick will wheel somebody out there at quarterback, and they'll find a way to stop the Bills.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know how I feel. You know how I feel.
I do. My other AFC pick'em game, I'm excited about this game. I think it might be one of the games of the week, but I like Baltimore over Oakland.
Interesting.
And the reason I like that game is Oakland has one of the top offenses in the league. Baltimore has a resurging defense. They're playing well. The game is in Baltimore. And so with Oakland having such a poor offense, I think that we're going to see a lot of points. I think it'll be an exciting game, but I think that Baltimore ultimately, with home field advantage, walks out of there with a very close win over an improving Oakland team.
Mm-hmm. And sorry, who was favored in that one?
Baltimore is 3.5 points.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll be a good game. That was on my list to watch. As for the NFC games, I am very excited about Monday Night Football this week. It's the New York Giants at Minnesota. Giants plus 4.5. Minnesota's 3-0 with Sam Bradford. And, I mean, the Giants currently have the NFL's best yards per play differential, so they're averaging 6.3 yards per play on offense and only giving up 5 yards per play on defense, which I wouldn't have expected. I'm always curious, when will Sam Bradford it up? Because you know there will come a point. And I think that the Vikings have a ridiculously good defense, but is that enough to carry them through struggles on offense? And I think it eventually will not be.
So who's your pick?
Oh, gosh. I think it's at home, so I got to go Vikings, but by very slim margin.
Yeah, I think right now what we're seeing in Minnesota is the team taking on the personality of the coach. Mike Zimmer is just such a gritty, down-to-earth, what-you-see-is-what-you-get kind of coach, and right now that's what we're seeing out of the play to go into Carolina and to beat Carolina. With Bradford just taking over this offense, really, that is a Mike Zimmer stamp right there. And I like Minnesota in this game, too, only because, as we had mentioned, with the injuries at running back, so it's going to be a very one-dimensional offense for New York. And if you have a one-dimensional offense, Mike Zimmer will exploit that and find the weakness. And so I look at Eli spending a lot of time on his back Monday night. So I like that. I don't see him running away with it. But, you know, because Minnesota has their own issues in one-dimensional offense. So, but I do expect a good game as well. And I agree that Minnesota squeaks out another one.
Awesome. Another game on my radar this week is the Lions at the Chicago Bears. Chicago plus 3, mostly just out of curiosity on this one. Also, Chicago being local, but, I mean, the Lions are 1-2, despite Stafford throwing 7 TDs already this season. So I don't really feel like their record reflects what they're off the numbers necessarily that the offense has been putting up. They have, I mean, losing to the Titans and the way that they lost to them. But at the same time, the Bears are 0-3. Their quarterback situation is up in the air. Jay Cutler's thumb or pride or whatever he's injured with this week. I feel like this is a defining moment for that team, whereas they go, both of them, as they continue the rest of the season. One might emerge with hope. The other might feel utterly defeated. So.
Yeah, I think Detroit is heading in the right direction and Chicago is not.
Yeah.
And so I think you got to like Detroit a little more here in this in that scenario. And, you know, the Bears, even taking Cutler out of the equation, which I'm not a believer in Cutler. We've talked about that. But they've had injuries on both sides of the ball. They're starting running back. You know, they're still trying to integrate Kevin White into that offense. And it's they're heading into rebuilding mode, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lions just kind of did a mini version of that with moving on from Calvin Johnson and bringing in Marvin Jones, who's having a fantastic season right now. So I think Detroit's heading in one direction. Chicago's heading in the other.
I like that. I was definitely going Detroit on this one as well. I've always liked Matt Stafford. I mean, people have hated on him since the beginning of his career, but I feel like he's got some grit. I mean, he wants to play ball. He wants to be there. He's taken a lot of hits over the years, and he I really hope good things for that team, because I think they deserve to have a winning season. And last on my list was Arizona Cardinals versus LA Rams. As an NFC West, I'm very invested in this game. So Cardinals -8, despite the Rams having the better record. You know, they're sitting at 2-1 somehow, miraculously. Cardinals 1-2, which is shocking.
It is shocking. Head coach Bruce Arians came out this week and said that he needs his younger players to kind of get in line, that they were trying to do their own thing. So, you know, you have to read between the lines to figure out what that exactly means. But there's a lot of veteran leadership on this team, so you would expect that those younger guys would already be following those veterans.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure what's happening there, but whatever it is, it's causing a disruption. And they are, much like Green Bay, out of sync, it seems.
Yeah. I would say that, I mean, I know he's coming back from a severe injury, but Honey Badger just not looking like himself, getting beat on things that I wouldn't think. And I know he's a team leader, even as a young person. So I think maybe that could be one of the young players that Arians really, I know he has such a special relationship with him. If you watched All or Nothing, you know that he loves that guy. And he's not afraid to, both of them have such an appreciation for each other. And so I think that's one of the people he probably really needs to step up moving forward. I just really hope that the Cardinals go ahead and crush Jeff Fisher. I'm sorry, I'm going to say it. They're in Glendale. They deserve a win. I am an unashamed Bruce Arians fan and Larry Fitzgerald lover, and I think that this team needs a win to kind of get its momentum going in the right direction.
Jeff Fisher will not be sending you a Christmas ham this year.
He would not be a fan of mine, but...
And that's okay. We're on the same page. You're just a little bit more vocal about it because of, I think, the conference that you're in.
Yes. So it is. It's a developed... My team has been the kryptonite for my team, and I don't understand why, so there's definitely some personal bias in there. I think they're very physical, so people always seem to walk, and I think Jeff Fisher kind of encourages that type of play. People always seem to walk away more injured from their games. And I think we saw it, was it the first week where they had 130 yards of total offense and 100 something yards in penalties. And so finally they're getting called on it. But I think that that's where a little bit of my dislike comes from.
Well, Fisher is a product of the 85 Bears.
Yeah,
and
totally.
The Buddy Ryan style of play. And so it does make sense that his teams will have that more physical demeanor.
Yeah.
And they are not the most talented team in the league, and he just lacks the ability to get the most talent out of his players, I think. He's you will fit what I'm trying to do versus adjusting to what he has in his team. And so
it's a Chip Kelly type of mentality
absolutely,
as well.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of my kryptonite, then, of course, would be Pittsburgh.
Oh.
And and so that's a game that I'm got on my radar as well. You've got the 2-1 Kansas City Chiefs heading into Pittsburgh, also 2-1. And you've got Kansas City coming off a dominant win over the Jets. 8 turnovers on defense, 6 interceptions, I believe. And still not the offensive juggernaut, but put up 24 points on the board. Pittsburgh coming off its worst loss in years to Philadelphia, 34-3.
Crazy.
It was crazy and made me very happy at the same time.
I get it, yeah.
And so I like Pittsburgh in that game. Unfortunately, you've got Le'Veon Bell coming back from suspension off the injury. So, you know, you have to wonder. But I think that they plan on just putting him right back in and using him the way they have in the past. And it's in Pittsburgh, coming off such a brutal loss. And you know, they're, again, a physical team, but they get away with a lot of things that teams like the Rams don't. And so, you know, it should be a good game, but I ultimately see Pittsburgh coming out of there, getting back on track, and Kansas City falling to a mediocre 2-2, which is kind of where they seem to always fit.
Ride that middle of the road right there.
Well, we're just hours away from the big Thursday night game. Ooh. And of course, the team near and dear to my heart playing host, the Cincinnati Bengals, hosting the Miami Dolphins. And Marvin Lewis's primetime record is just simply mind-boggling. Do you know what his record is in primetime?
No, but I'm very curious.
He is 8-26
Holy
in
heck.
Primetime games. And
what?
8-26. That is 26 losses. That's almost 2 seasons worth of losses. And the real thing that you can take away from that is, in talking about being mediocre, Cincinnati can beat the average teams in the league, but your primetime games are typically your marquee matchups versus the top teams in the league, and we lose. Cincinnati loses to those teams consistently. And so 8-26, there you go. And then you have opportunities like this with Thursday Night Football. Everybody gets a chance to be on Thursday Night Football, so you're going to have those less than marquee matchups every now and again, this being one of them. Miami coming into town. Cincinnati's 7.5-point favorites here. Miami is 16-5 all-time versus Cincy, and they're 3-0 the last 3 games, the last one being a primetime game near or on Halloween night.
Wow.
Ended with Andy Dalton getting a safety in his end zone in overtime.
Wow.
Also the game that Geno Atkins tore his ACL. So Halloween horrors of many type for Cincinnati the last time they played Miami. Now that was in Miami. So I think that ultimately injuries are going to be the key to this game. Both teams have a lot of key players out. Cincinnati without starting cornerback Dre Kirkpatrick. Tyler Eifert, their tight end, still out. He's doubtful, but I do not expect to see him at all. And Miami without running back Arian Foster, tight end Jordan Cameron, linebacker Koa Misi, center Mike Pouncey, and maybe even backup center, can you even name him, Mr. Anthony Steen, their backup center, may not play tonight. So when you're looking at a backup guard, you know, jumping in there at center, that is bad news for the offensive line. So I do, on paper, I like Cincinnati in this game.
Yeah.
Not in a blowout, in a close one. My heart tells another story simply by looking at that 8-26 primetime record.
Yeah.
But on paper, I like Cincinnati.
That is brutal. I think it's more of a factor in baseball, but maybe you could say that the Bengals are one of the least clutch teams
Absolutely.
That exist, and not only with their postseason record, but now I'm now hearing this with their primetime record. Just seems like when the stakes are there, they do not seem to perform well, which is unfortunate because I, again, another team that I want to see succeed. I really do. I like Andy Dalton. I like Marvin Lewis, AJ Green, a lot of like stand up good guys out there. I wanna say I'm going with the Bengals on this one as well, because like you said, they're gonna get a bump with the defense this week. And I think AJ Green has just had a shaky start. You know, he's, like you said, he just had his first child. He's kind of, I mean, last week he didn't look himself. He dropped that one pass that I think I yelled at the television. It was like this to the side of the field. And I just, it's like, what are you doing? But I think he's going to return to his former self. And we're going to see better numbers from him.
I had a funny conversation in the tailgate pregame with a colleague, and we were discussing how AJ was going to perform with the new child. And it's just funny the conversations you have and when thinking about how players are going to perform, you know, especially if you're a veteran fantasy player, you look at literally every aspect. And we were talking about, well, AJ, he's probably been up, you know, feeding this newborn baby, up changing diapers in the middle of the night. How tired is he going to be? That sort of thing. And, you know, it did show on the field. You could tell that his head was somewhere else, mm-hmm. probably at home, thinking about his newborn baby. There's nothing wrong with that, but he definitely didn't deliver last week. And let's hope, if you're an owner of AJ Green or if you are a Bengals fan, then let's hope that he does get his head back in the game this week.
Yeah, I know last week I made the same comparison, but as a Cardinals fan, Matt Carpenter, again, had his first baby this year and then took some paternity leave. But I remember one of his quotes about coming back after it was, oh, I think it's really great because now I kind of have a distraction from baseball. Because he called his child a distraction. because sometimes I think about baseball too, or I'm too all about baseball. So, I mean, that's a very different perspective of how it's being a first-time father is terrifying enough and mm-hmm. crazy enough in the world. So to expect these people to come back and just perform outstanding, both outstanding players in their given sports, is kind of unreasonable. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
A fun fact for the game, we've got a little brother versus brother situation here. Now, it's not as marquee as maybe a Manning versus Manning matchup mm-hmm. might have been a few years ago, but you have Bengals backup linebacker Nick Vigil,
okay.
and you have Dolphins backup linebacker Zach Vigil squaring off. So perhaps a little special teams confrontations
nice.
Might happen there. So watch out for the kick teams tonight, as you've got the Vigil brothers squaring off in prime time.
Awesome.
So we'll see. All right, we're just about wrapping up here, but let's send it home like we always like to do with asking, what's the deal with? And my what's the deal with yep. is I want to revisit something that you brought up earlier.
Mm-hmm.
What's the deal with Dez Bryant?
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned how he missed his MRI appointment. He missed some team meetings. The Cowboys are, you know, now making excuses. This is five-year-old behavior.
Absolutely.
This is, I've done something bad and I'm going to go hide from mom and dad because I don't want to face the consequences. Mm-hmm. You are not a rookie. You are a six-year veteran. You are arguably the face of the franchise. You have to man up. This is not about you. This mm-hmm. is not about you missing time. This is about your team and how you handle this whole situation moving forward. Mm-hmm. And it really exposes the immaturity that Dez Bryant still deals with. Bad news, Bryant.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think part of Jason Garrett's quote this week was, we have special ways that we speak to Dez Bryant. And I mean, that's him putting a spin on it. But to hear that is, we have to baby him. We have to sit him down and have special conversations with him and, you know, pad his sensitivities. And yeah, I mean, this is football. This is a team sport. It literally means putting the team above oneself and one's own interests. And this is just, to me, pretty selfish. And silly. A silly reason to get fined. A silly reason to, you know, to create controversy when your team does not need it.
Absolutely. With Romo out, you have a rookie quarterback in there now. Mm-hmm. Let's lead by example.
Yeah.
And he's reverting back to his own rookie form when they had to give him a handler to go around. And clearly they still do. So what's the deal with that?
I would absolutely agree with that. This also echoes something we've already chit-chatted about, but the Arizona Cardinals being 1-2. I can't understand it. I mean, and that is a Seattle fan, so there's a secret part of me that wants them to not do amazing. But I love the fact that we have a genuine rival in our conference. I love Bruce Arians. I like when both teams are good because it makes for great football. And losing 18-33 to the Bills, I just did not understand. I was wondering, is there a curse of you've got this week, you've got Jeff Fisher versus Bruce Arians, you've got Hard Knocks versus All or Nothing. Is there some type of reality TV curse? Because traditionally, Hard Knocks teams have not done the best coming out of that season. So I'm wondering what you think.
I agree with that selection as a what's the deal with, because I too think that this is a team that is just, you know, they were a game away from the Super Bowl last year. They return most of the same roster. Veteran leadership at the quarterback position, at the wide receiver position, on defense. Patrick Peterson, I mean, they are stacked from top to bottom, emerging running back star and David Johnson, and to lose to the Bills, who were up against the ropes in their own right at 0-2, that's a head scratcher for sure, and I will be very curious to see how they turn it around. I'm sure they will. But do they turn it around to the point of, okay, we're 9-7 squeaking into the playoffs, or are they going to return to that dominant form that we saw last year? And from a fantasy perspective, you're seeing guys like John Brown, who a lot of people coveted as kind of a sleeper mid-round pick, coming off a 1,000-yard season. He had the concussion in preseason, and he just hasn't produced so far this year. Numbers are kind of down all around.
Yeah, even Larry Fitzgerald, I think, and again, that is a defense that was dominating last year, I think. And so far this year has given up way too many points where I think the quality, I mean, maybe he's injured at this point, but Robert Kimdichie I was expecting big things from. And the return of the Honey Badger. I mean, because they lost him for a good part of the season last year, and look how far they went. So I agree with you. I'm very curious to see what happens in the divisional showdown.
Well, that's going to do it for week 4 of the Fantasy Football Forecast from the Tower. We wish you luck with all of your...
Yes.
I don't like the term fake teams, only because I spend so much time on them that they're real to us. So good luck with your real fantasy teams. May you get a win this week, and we'll be back here next week with more tips, suggestions, and breaking news from the Tower.